Hi, welcome to FOSDEM 2022. My name is Dave Cremins. I'm a cloud software architect in the platform software division at Intel, and I'm joined today by Abdul Halim, who's a senior software engineer also in the platform software division at Intel. Today, we want to discuss application device queues and how that pertains to predictable network traffic in Kubernetes. So for today's agenda, I want to cover the current state of microservices from a networking perspective. I want to draw attention to some of the things that are required by your platform and infrastructure when you have a microservices deployment in place, and how that can put a lot of pressure on the networking constructs that are in place to support your applications and services. We'll also discuss the network contention that is pervasive in cloud native deployments. And then we'll cover solutions to these problems via our application device queues. Abdul then will take you through how that works from an orchestration perspective. We'll cover the flow of events that are required to leverage such a technology. And he'll also present some preliminary results that we've gathered over the course of our development work. And then finally, we'll have some closing comments. So microservices, it's a software pattern that's leveraged today. It promotes the decomposition of an application into smaller operating pieces that have well-defined boundaries of functionality. So I don't think this would be new to most folks tuning in today, but I just wanted to provide some context. You know, the days of monolithic applications, have been superseded by, these microservices deployments, whereby these applications are deconstructed and we have well-defined services that provide a particular behavior. And, they're usually developed to do one thing and to do that one thing really well. They're loosely coupled as well. So the environment that they're deployed into, they honor the loosely coupled type of mentality. And they leverage APIs between each other in order to communicate. They're commonly packaged as containers and deployed into orchestration platforms. So for instance, a Docker container deployed into something like Kubernetes, that's a typical deployment scenario that's leveraged today. And these API interfaces rely heavily on the network in order to communicate with each other. So like, I don't have a case of calling into another object in my code base or into another package within my code base. Typically what happens is that the APIs are defined for these microservices, and then a communication is required from service A to service B, and that puts a huge dependency on the network. And because there is this diverse deployment of services and applications, it results in a number of different things, right? There's a huge increase in east-west traffic. You could potentially have hundreds of services and containers running on a single compute platform. And when we look at a distributed type of deployment, that could potentially grow to thousands. And when we take a sample full request response cycle initiated by, let's say, a user through an API gateway, through a front end, and then into a mesh of services in the back end, it will actually end up passing through multiple microservices, many microservices, in order to deliver the full service to the user. And, so each microservice will create another dependency on the network to ensure that it can communicate with the next microservice in the hop. And a lot of these technologies that are deployed, have extra auxiliary services deployed with them, like for instance, sidecar deployments that are heavily leveraged in service mesh architectures, right? And again, everything I've spoken about now is for a single application or service, whereby it's really governed by a single tenant. This becomes you know, an order of magnitude more difficult to manage when you have multi-tenant deployments, especially in the context of cloud native and, you know, hyperscaler infrastructures. You know, so it's not just you on the platform. You can have many different tenants competing for resources, you know, and the network has to serve all of them, you know. So it is something that, you know, we feel that solutions are warranted for. Next. So here we have an example of two graphs. One from Uber, which I think most folks on the tuning in today will be familiar with. And we have another one here from a recent company, Monzo. They provide an online banking service. So they're like an online bank. They have no like physical presence. And they've adopted, both of these companies have adopted microservices. And as you can see, on the left here, Uber has roughly around 2,200 microservices in their platform. And Monzo, even though they're much newer than Uber, they've already hit 1,500 microservices. And what this graph tries to depict is the interdependencies that emerge when multiple services are required to be consumed in order to fulfill a full end service to the user or to another service. You know, so we end up creating a huge dependency and then identifying the network as a critical resource that needs to be leveraged for these microservices to actually function and do their job. You know, and when you look at this and in the context of the actual microservices themselves, you can see that they have huge dependency chains right across the entire platform. You know, so there's a huge opportunity for this to grow very complex, very fast. And the resources that are relied on, you know, whether it's compute or networking or storage, they need to be architected in such a way to handle this type of traffic, to handle this type of scaling, and to be able to adapt to, you know, bursts of traffic or of users that will leverage these services. You know, so it really is something that should highlight the critical dependency that microservices will have on the underlying network. Yeah, so let's go back to and examine it purely from a networking perspective. So as we've already covered, more microservices means more east-west traffic. Then the side effect to that is a more demand and dependency on the network. You know, so as traffic increases, extra jitter can result in unpredictable response times for services. You know, so when we look at an example of an environment that is underpinned by, you know, Ethernet connections or an Ethernet fabric, you know, we can see here that the different colored traffic here shows the different colors apply to different traffic patterns that are destined for either different services or different tenants. You know, so it's like a freeway system for data traveling between different systems in a distributed manner. You know, so it's essentially looking like it could be chaotic depending on, you know, how many more services are deployed and have a dependency on the network, or how many more tenants are deployed into, you know, a public type of cloud. So the net effect of, you know, an increase in east-west traffic as well as extra jitter, you know, is essentially a degradation of SLAs. And the degradation occurs or manifests in terms of a reduction in performance, increases in latency, and also potential reductions in throughput. So, like, this is a problem that we have identified. And what we want to do is we want to ensure that we can bring a level of predictability to services that are deployed into cloud native environments. So, and here we have application device queues, which is a technology, that we have designed to improve application specific queuing and steering, specifically for the type of problems that we have discussed in terms of the contention that can happen. If you look here on the right, the upper, let's say the without ADQ diagram, we could see that exactly this one here, we can see that there will be contention. So like this set of traffic is needs to be directed at the right service, and there's no inherent way of actually achieving that with these deployments. So how does ADQ actually work? It's able to filter application traffic to a dedicated set of queues, and the application threads of execution themselves are then connected to specific queues within the ADQ queue set. And another offering from ADQ is bandwidth control of the application egress network traffic. So all of this results in, you know, more predictability, reductions in application latency, and overall throughput increases. So when we examine the traffic patterns after an ADQ solution has been leveraged, we can focus here on the next diagram, whereby we can see that we have, you know, kind of prioritized certain lanes within the network traffic to ensure that they are being delivered to the right service, or to the right microservice in this case. So we reduce the contention on the actual underlying fabric. And here is just a depiction of how it actually works then from a hardware perspective. So if we look here on the furthermost right, we can see our application threads, and our application threads then are connected into a queue set. And then we have the right traffic then being directed to the right queue set, which allows the application to process the received traffic and transmit traffic much more efficiently. So like when we have these capabilities built into our solutions, we're not kind of predestined to ensure that the platform has a certain level of affinitization set up. Like, for instance, pinning ourselves to a particular core so that we can process the traffic. And then if our pod was to move in the Kubernetes context, we have to repin it to a core on the platform that it gets moved to. So with this, we're kind of independent. So we embrace the abstraction layers, and we do another level of plumbing to ensure that whatever queue set has been assigned to the application, that the traffic coming in can be tagged correctly and then filtered straight into that queue set, which can then be leveraged by the application thread itself. So from a hardware perspective, we enable a path from ePoll that leverages busy polling sockets. Polling is configured on the platform, and this really provides a hint for application threads to monitor specific sockets and then align to the traffic coming in on those sockets. And you know, this gives us other capabilities as well, such as sockets on the same cube can be handled by the same thread, and we can honor a single producer-consumer pattern per queue to ensure that we have the affinitization to the traffic as opposed to our platform. But really, from a high-level perspective, you know, this, how does application device queues, you know, help the applications? So it essentially configures the application identifier on the NIC, and the NIC then is able to steer traffic to dedicated load balance queues. So our traffic knows where it's destined for, and this, I think, is going to bring an advancement into cloud native deployments when the traffic knows where it's meant to be going. You know, so, and there's hardware capabilities then that are able to ensure that that's processed effectively and efficiently. We can also configure our TX rates on the NIC per application. You know, so we can set different rate limits per application as opposed to, you know, a fixed rate limit for all leveraging the underlying NIC. And also then there are numerous optimizations built into the NIC driver to support things like interrupts and load balancing optimizations to ensure that we have an efficient means of directing traffic and steering traffic straight into the right application. So now I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Abdul Halim. He will take you through how ADQ actually works in the context of Kubernetes.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks today for the giving the overview of the detailed overview of the ADQ in general and how it's important for the microservices to improve its performance and reduce the latency. So here we'll see now how we can leverage the ADQ technologies in the Kubernetes environment to, so that we can enable our microservices the ADQ performance benefit. So first, we'll start looking into the ADQ components that needed for the to deploy in the Kubernetes. So as we can see, they are on the green boxes. These are the three main components that are enabling the ADQ technologies in Kubernetes deployment. The first ADQ is a hardware resource. We have limited number of hardware queues available in a platform. So as you know, Kubernetes has this device plugin mechanism to register and allocate any platform resources to your workload. So in this context, we have ADQ device plugin that will manage the accountability of the hardware queues on the host. Also, hardware queue that allocation of the, for the application or the container, and also this extended resource also will be considered when the application are being scheduled to a particular node that has the ADQ capabilities. Then obviously we'll need to configure the RX of that interface. So we leveraging the Cilium CNI in the bath mode. So basically what we do is we develop the ADQ CNI plugin that acts as a CNI chain on top of the Cilium CNI, and that configures the RX side of the interface, which is basically taking the application port information and the interface IP information, and then we are able to add the filter to the hardware queues so that application traffic goes into the dedicated hardware queues. And then on the TX side, we need to configure the net priority of the C group of the interface. So basically in that case, we needed a pod readiness watcher that watches when the pod is ready based on that particular socket is created for that pod. When that is ready, then it added the C group priority of that interface so that all the traffic that goes through, goes out of this interface added to that network priority of that interface. So these are the main three components, and these are all three of them are deployed as a daemon set in the node. So user just deployed and once, and then a platform should be ready to be ready for the ADQ capabilities. Then in the next slide, we'll see how user can request an ADQ for their workload. So as you can see, this is our sample deployment, Memcached server instance running, and we introduced the ADQ configuration via the annotation. So we introduced this ADQ config annotation, and it basically specified which port that we want to enable the ADQ and the application port number that's running and using the which protocol is used, whether it's UDP or TCP. And then as we mentioned that it's ADQ is a hardware resource, so we need to also create make a extended resource request of this from this interface. It's exposed as an ADQ interface. So these are the only additional information user need to provide to take advantage of the ADQ that and the platform has capability of. And similar to in the client side, is configuration pretty much the same. Only difference is that it configures the remote port. So basically, so we can actually configure the receive side that from which port that it will receive the traffic from. So we just need to know the server side IP in the port number, and it will be configured by the CNI and the net priority of that ADQ C groups. So based on this, we'll be able to leverage the ADQ performance on a platform on our workload. So we'll see the this is the preliminary results that we have seen the improvement using the ADQ versus non-ADQ deployment. As you can see, this is measured by the latency percentiles, which means that P25 means that the 25% of the packets have the top 25% of the packets have the latency of 1579 microseconds. As you can see, P999 means that 99.9% of the packet have that latency of 3919 microseconds without the ADQ. But when we introduce the ADQ, this latency dramatically reduced to 92%, which is like 288 microseconds for 99.9% of the packets. So as you can see, ADQ reduced the latency of the packets a lot, and I think this is very important for the microservices deployment to ensure that deterministic performance of the microservices. So these are the preliminary results. I think there are additional benchmarking results will be available soon as we complete those. So with that, I'll hand over to Dave.
Thanks, Abdul. So just some closing comments. So ADQ is a technology designed to improve application-specific queuing and steering. I hope it's clear from the presentation today that it was built to actually provide that that type of solution. It also it allows filtering of application traffic to a dedicated set of queues, as we've seen, and it optimizes how data polling is performed. You know, so when we look at ADQ, it has three very important factors. There's predictability, there's latency, and there's throughput. So when we look at these three, I feel that they're incredibly important as more and more domains onboard to Kubernetes, as more microservices are encapsulated in pods and more pods are deployed to platforms. It will become something of an issue when you know all different types of services and applications are fighting and contending for networking resources. Bandwidth is a finite resource, you know, so certain applications can tolerate extra levels of latency. Other applications that are qualified as higher priority absolutely cannot. So we see this as being a supplementary solution into Kubernetes networking applications, as well as the standard microservices type of deployments to ensure that there is something in place that helps with more deterministic performance or predictability in that case. So from internally, from the team that both myself and Abdul work with, the Kubernetes orchestration code is in its final stages of being open sourced. We have a couple of things that we are waiting for to be upstreamed so that all dependencies can be leveraged. That's essentially the TC Flower forward queue filters feature, the per TC inline flow director, per TC queries per second per polar, and the polar timeout. So we need these to be upstreamed and committed into the necessary drivers so that they're available on the platforms that want to leverage ADQ. All of our work to date has worked with the current version 4.19. So any version past that should be compatible with the ADQ feature. So with that, I would like to say thank you for joining our presentation today. I hope it's been beneficial, and I hope that the ADQ technology can be leveraged by those looking to provide more predictability for their applications and services in the context of cloud native, Kubernetes, or hyperscaler deployments. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Awesome indeed. folks. Thanks, Dave, and thanks to Abdul as well, who can't join us today. I don't see any questions yet, but I have some prepared. So Dave, is the ADQ solution tied to a specific container runtime?
So funnily enough, when we started the project, we had based the solution on OCI hooks, the Open Container Initiative. And during that particular period, we OCI is actually only supported from a cryo perspective. So at the very beginning, during development, we did only support the cryo runtime. But recent modifications and some refactoring has allowed us to remove the dependency on OCI and become compatible with Containerd and Docker as well. So no, there is no dependency now on any of the or any of the three runtimes. It's at your discretion.
Excellent. That provides a lot more flexibility for folks wishing to use this. Does it work with other CNIs?
Again, this is built in a chained fashion, so it should be independent of, or at least from a design perspective, it's independent of existing CNIs. What'll actually happen is your setup and configuration will instruct the Kubernetes to chain the calls together so that if, let's say, if Cilium is in place or Calico or something, that once it has finished execution, then it'll relay a message to the ADQ CNI then to further do more configuration and plumbing. So right now it is tied to a specific version of Cilium, but our intentions are to have this independently deployable into your Kubernetes cluster and be, let's say, separate to any existing CNI. So it won't be tied to CNIs going forward.
Okay, excellent. Does this require additional instrumentation to monitor, or can the performance metrics be gathered from existing APIs?
So currently we don't plug into existing metrics APIs. So it would need an element of, I suppose, bespoke instrumentation for metrics gathering and analysis. But I think going forward, depending on the use case that we see with ADQ, we will look to have that information captured. So we do have some stuff in the works that allows you to visualize what's going on in your ADQ solutions or your deployed solutions, but it's not plugged into any existing metrics APIs at the moment, no.
Okay, one last question. Once you overcome the network bandwidth issues you have, the performance really starts to depend on the determinism of the application itself. Is this something that, is ADQ something that would be used in conjunction with something like CPU pinning?
Yes, if ADQ on its own cannot deliver on the performance characteristics of your application, it'll sure help. But if it's not able to actually to bring that for you, then yes, you do have other options that you can leverage from your deployed platform. CPU pinning is definitely one of them. That should allow you to process maybe more packets and avoid noisy neighbor situations. But yes, it can work in addition to other solutions. Yes.
Excellent.